Welcome to the Big Careers Small Children podcast. My name is Verena Hefti. I believe that no one should have to choose between becoming a CEO and enjoying their young children. For much too long, brilliant people have found themselves stuck on the career ladder when they have children, and that leads to gender inequality in leadership and the same stale, mostly male, middle-class people leading our organizations. We absolutely must change this, and I hope that many of you listening right now to this podcast will progress to the most senior leadership roles possible in a way that works for you and for your families, so you can make the decisions that make our world and our organizations better places. Beyond the podcast, I am the CEO and founder of the social enterprise Leaders Plus, which is all about giving parents the support and space to progress to senior leadership in a way that works for them and their families. We have lots of free events and also lots of resources on leadersplus.org, where you can download helpful toolkits such as on returning from maternity leave, or securing a promotion as a working parent, or thriving or surviving, depending how you look at it, as a dual career couple. We also have an award-winning global fellowship program for working parents who have big dreams for their careers but don't want to sacrifice everything for it. You will join a tight-knit, supportive group of people. You'll get space to think about what you want for your life, for your family, for your career, a senior leader mentor, and a lot of targeted support in order to get you where you would like to be. And you can find all that on leadersplus.org/fellowship for the details. The next application deadline is on 20th March 2024, and you can download the brochure on leadersplus.org. Today I talk to Britta Fernandez-Schmidt about intuition and dealing with fears. Enjoy the conversation. A very warm welcome, Britta, to the podcast. Wonderful to have you here. Let's start with you introducing who you are, what you do for work, and who is in your family.
Thank you so much, Verena. I'm really delighted to be on your podcast. And hello, everybody. Yeah, so I, for a very long time, worked in the not-for-profit sector, working in organizations supporting women in countries affected by war and conflict. And 2 years ago, I left that job and I created my own business. And I now work as a transformational coach. And I also run courses for women and also for senior management teams. And I run courses in companies, all aimed at helping you step into your power. And I'm also an author. I published my book, Fierce to Fierce, 3 years ago. And I'm a mother of two children and grown-up children, may I say, 23 and 21. Yes.
Wonderful. Can you share one thing that you used to believe about combining a senior career with children that you don't subscribe to anymore?
Ooh, I like that question. What came to my mind immediately is the way we even talk about our personal and professional life in a way that really divides it. And I used to subscribe to that and used to kind of feel like, yeah, exactly, there's your professional life and there's your personal life and you need to find a balance. And now I believe that this division isn't actually serving us, because I am one human being. I'm a whole human being, and this whole human being goes to work, and this whole human being is in her family and with her friends. And so I find it more helpful for me to think about my own needs and desires, ambitions, and wants in relationship to the different parts of my life. And that allows me to actually be more conscious of the life that I want to create for myself.
Mm. And you recently decided and then published a book, Fierce to Fierce. I'm interested, what was the triggering moment for you? I mean, did you always dream of becoming an author, or did you just decide one day, I'm going to write a book? How did that happen?
Yeah, I actually really love this. I talk about this regularly as a way to show that sometimes attuning to what emerges is the way. I mean, for me, this is the way now. I've never had a five-year plan. I've always been very intuitive in what I do. I definitely didn't have a bucket list, and writing a book was not on my, something that I was going to do. And it really emerged, and emerged out of a period where I was increasingly being asked to speak at conferences, particularly on women in leadership, and asked to speak about how I had managed to develop a career, have a family, and really lead a very purpose-driven life. And so one of those conferences was a keynote speech, and I kind of sat down and I really thought, okay, what have I learned? And I looked over my reflection notebooks, which I always regularly do. And I came up with these 10 points, and they felt really meaty. And as I looked at it, I kind of thought, I think maybe these are 10 chapters. I think maybe I'm going to write a book. And so then it was really like, oh, I think I'm going to write a book. And then it was, I started Googling, how do you write a book?
How do you write a book? I'm quite curious.
I know. How do you write a book? So based on the research I did, it's very interesting because it's very male dominated and it's very much catering to the traditional, may I say, because I know that there are some men who are listening, and I'm sure there are some men who are listening who are actually caring equally, sharing the responsibility of caring for their children. But the kind of podcasts that I listened to and the articles that I read were very much still based on this more traditional model. And it kind of said, now what you do is you get up in the morning, about 6-7 o'clock, and then you spend like 3-4 hours writing. And you do that every day because it's very important that you do it every day, round about the same time, and then you kind of continue with the rest of your life. And I was like, oh my goodness, okay. Well, so either I'm not going to write a book, or I find my own way, And so I did, because, I didn't have time in the morning. I had to, take my children to school, and I had to go to work. And also it wasn't going to work for me to write every day. That just the thought, made me feel really stressed. And I didn't, I didn't want this to be a chore. I wanted to do it because I wanted to do it. And so I found my own way. And I, I made time and holidays in the morning, like 2-3 hours. And I discussed it with my family, and they knew what I was doing and why I was doing it, so it was an agreement that I could use that time. And then I did on weekends. And then towards the end, I took a couple of weeks out of my family life, and I went away on my own to edit and finish. But I did this over a period of like 2-3 years. But yeah, that is my experience. But I think the key for me, Verena, what I've really learned is that, you can find out how other people do it. But the most important thing is for you to sit and to feel into you and your life and what you feel could work for you. And then you follow that. And then if you need to, you adjust it. But you know better than anyone else what's going to work for you.
That's very interesting. And I also interviewed Mary Ann Seacart, who I think you might be really interested in, actually, for this podcast. And she talks all about how there's such an authority gap between men and women. And actually, exactly to the point you're saying, there's the best-selling books, women are usually underrepresented, generally publishing. It's very hard as a woman to get a book published. So well done you. And interesting how you have to find your own. Right. So you were still employed in a normal, in quotation marks, job. Then you had to fit around that, right?
Right. Exactly. Yeah, exactly. I had to fit it all around.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. And just talking to you, you come across as someone who's really, you're feeling things. Were you always, it sounds like you really rely on your intuition and your gut feeling. Were you always like that, or did you change?
Great question, because the answer is yes and no. And it's definitely true that now I really nurture feeling into things. And I say to a lot of my clients, often I say, let's park the head for a moment. We can come back to our heads. They're amazing. But let's actually employ our heart and our intuition, our gut, and really feel into things and just notice how quickly you access information. Really rich information that alone in the mind, you actually is very hard to access. So that's something that I'm very passionate about and I'm using a lot in my work. But I have not been like this. I had actually a really hard time knowing what my feelings are for the longest time. And that was not easy. And yet I would say that in kind of crucial moments, if I look back and I see the decisions I've taken, the big decisions were actually intuitive. And they kind of came from like a sense, I want to do this. And then it happened. So that's interesting. So it's always there. And I say this to my clients and to everyone who wants to hear it. We all have our deep inner knowing and our intuition. It's just, do we make space so we can actually listen to it? And can we develop trust in this inner wisdom instead of like looking outward all the time to what do other people think? Is this right? Is this wrong? And I always say, you take that question and put it inside and ask, does it feel right or does it feel wrong? And then you make your decision.
Interesting. I read a book. It sounds like I'm reading books all the time. I'm obviously not. But just for some reason, talking to you makes me think of all the books I read. By Gerd Gigenter. I think he's German, like you, actually, about the power of intuition. And he's a professor and studied it. And apparently, there are lots of decisions that are much better. And the intuition is a better decision maker, assuming you already have a lot of experience, which I guess by the time you're 30, you do have a lot of life experience already. The only thing is it can make you, your own biases will play a role. But I thought that was really interesting.
Right, exactly. I think that's very interesting. I'm reading a book at the moment called Radical Intuition, which is really beautiful. And it's really putting into words what feels very intuitive. And so that's really nice because it makes it more conscious. And I do believe that as we become more aware of how our intuition guides us, it becomes more potent. It's very, very powerful. And it's very fast. This is what I find, and very reliable. Very reliable. I mean, genuinely, when I followed my intuition, it's always served me. So I always encourage everybody to play with that. Just play with it, with little things. And then you can build up the trust and then,
But do you have to be a special type of person? And I mean that in the nicest possible way. But do you have to be, let's say, into yoga and do lots of meditation and this sort of stuff? Nothing against it. But yeah, do you have to be like that in order to be into intuition? Like, do you have to do interesting exercises that are a little bit strange? I'm having this picture in my mind, which can you just, how do you
I
do
love
it?
Exactly. No, exactly. I know. I mean, I love yoga and I do yoga, so I probably fit your stereotype.
Sorry.
I also meditate. No. I think this is great. It's great that you say it out so loudly because I think this is what keeps some people from utilizing their intuition because they believe it's some kind of woohoo or, you're making your potions and you're meditating and whatnot. What I find is that slowing down, and I have slowed down vastly. I mean, if you had had me on the podcast, say, 5 years ago, I would have probably spoken at double the speed because this is also how my mind was, double the speed. And I was just like, go, 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 go. And like, time is precious. And you just, and that kind of rushing is a good thing. That was very much the kind of, you just kind of get stuff done. And I don't believe that anymore. In fact, I believe the opposite now. I believe that as we slow down, we become much more impactful and we achieve, in inverted commas, more than double in half the time, if it is about achieving, which I would question. It's not always about achieving, but either way, that is absolutely the case. And so, unfortunately, sometimes people just really entirely rely on their reason because there are these beliefs that intuition isn't scientific. And so therefore, then we don't trust it so much. But the fact is that we are all utilizing our intuition all the time. And so I think there's more and more literature available and thought leaders who recognize that it's very limiting to us if we only rely on our brain intelligence, that, we also have a heart, we have heart intelligence and we have intuitive intelligence. And it actually allows us to take more rounded decisions and access knowledge, more holistically. So to answer your question, I believe that everybody has it. And everybody can hone it and rely on it.
I think your point about speed is very interesting as well. I can highly identify probably with the pre rather than the post preacher that you're describing. But I always think back of my mum who is a doctor and she told me, I don't know why, but she did tell me always when I was a child, she said, in the medical emergencies, you need to make sure you are slow enough and you don't move too fast. And I think that's a really interesting thing, that in the moments where you need to get it right, I keep someone alive or something really important, you need to not rush. And that has stuck with me a lot. And I'm trying to do that when things are hectic. Interesting. But how do you do that? I mean, we're talking here to working parents who are probably listening to this podcast either while hanging up the washing, trying to also keep their children entertained, or on a run, trying to, finding 20 minutes of me time and so on. So how do you slow down? And it sounds like I'm going to be challenging here, please forgive me, but your children are grown up and you have now set up your own organization, which means you can be in charge of your own time. Is there hope for the rest of us who have still young children to slow down in any shape or form?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely, 100%. And I work with, like, most of my clients are either around my age, you know, where the children have grown up and they're about to embark on a new venture, or they're in the midst of this, like, this, you know, they're doing really well in their career, they have a young family, and life is just hectic. I mean, let's not call it hectic, let's call it rich. And absolutely, it's completely possible, because time is, so this, we did this the other day in a course that I run on women in leadership. We actually felt into time. What is time? What is the concept of time? And how is that affecting how we experience our life? So if you go around, you're constantly saying, I don't have time, I don't have time, I don't have time, I don't have time. You don't have time. I mean, literally, you're just constantly chasing your tail. And as a result, you're actually never really present. Because you don't have time, you're already running to the next moment, which means you're not here in this moment. But it's all a mental construct. I mean, it genuinely, literally, if you investigate what your beliefs are about time, that is revolutionary. It really changes. And you become aware that actually, as you slow down, time slows down. Suddenly, you actually have more time. And I mean, I have really practiced this. And this, I started this when I was still taking my children to school, you know, and I didn't. Obviously, I do have much more time now, it's absolutely right. But I started meditating, you know, on the train 10 minutes every morning when I was commuting after, you know, I dropped my children. And so, and just 10 minutes a day, it just changed so much of how I experienced the day. It allowed me to be much more focused. And we know this, right? This is why companies have meditation rooms and why they encourage, you know, their employees to meditate, because it actually focuses the mind.
Mm.
And so you become more productive because you are more present in each moment, which means that if I am now working on an essay, I'm 100% concentrated on the essay. I'm not like 50% thinking about dinner and another 30% thinking about this. And then, like, right? So it does make a lot of sense. And this kind of focus actually slows you down.
Mm.
So there is hope for all of us. And I was just actually talking to a client who's a young mother, just started in a very high-powered job in government. And we were talking exactly about this. And one of the things that I've recommended is to be very intentional as you change from one moment to the next. So say you've been at work and now you're on your way to pick up your child. So instead of like rushing out of work and you're rushing and you're rushing and you're picking up your child and you're kind of still half at work and you're half already making dinner, you just say, okay, now I'm going to leave work. Okay, breath out. And now I'm going to pick up my child. Breath in. And now I'm going to be with my child. And maybe if you know that there are some things that you still need to tend to, you just say, okay, now until my child goes to bed, I am with my child, present in each moment. And then afterwards, I will give myself a little bit of space so I can just do my housekeeping. This is what I call it. Your housekeeping, you kind of, you check, okay, what have I not done? What is kind of lurking in the back of my mind that's kind of keep nagging, but I don't really know it. Bring it out front. Look at it. Decide, what are you going to do? And, you know, and give yours, like, literally do this housekeeping before you go to bed so that you can actually rest and sleep, because otherwise it's like. So that doesn't require any more time. It requires intentionality. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. I think there is something about taking responsibility for it. And I don't, obviously, we're all working within a system which is imperfect. It's imperfect that we have to rush to childcare and so on. So let's not skirt around that. But there is something about intentionality. So probably about 6 months ago, I felt like I really didn't have enough time. And my coach made me do an audit, essentially just for 2 weeks, just track every half an hour what you're doing. And it is so interesting. Turns out I actually did have time. And then as a result, I mean, I'm not saying I wasn't busy. Of course I was. But I think just making small changes, for example, for me, make it real different to have half an hour of planning time on a Monday morning to know what I was trying to achieve that week. Sounds so basic, but for me, it was really, really important. Mm. And even, you know, just putting the things that really matter first, I think that makes a big, big difference. Actually, I'm saying this now. I should do the exercise again and see how my diary is different now and how my life is.
Oh, this changed.
It's different. Yeah.
It's right. And you know, Verena, one of the things that really helped me, because what I have found, and I imagine that many of your listeners have find this too, is that I managed to do my job really well. And I kind of managed as a mother and the house and the dogs I didn't really make any time for me for the longest time. I just, it's like, I don't have time for that. You know, I don't have time. And then I thought, actually, you know what? I want to take ownership of my time, because it's not like time runs my life. That doesn't make sense, right? And so I started putting time slots in my diary. So it was, you know, so normally we use the diary for our professional life, right? And we put everything in we need to do at work. And then we somehow try and squeeze in the things that, you know, are important to us personally. And I suddenly realized that that doesn't work for me. And so I started to, you know, put meditation, yoga, running, whatever it is that I wanted to do in the diary. And if you're not comfortable putting it in as it is, because perhaps other people have access to your diary, you can give it a different name, or you can just say block. And I would do the same on a Friday afternoon. Every afternoon, zero meetings, no meetings, so that I could end the week like looking after some emails and just kind of doing again housekeeping and allowing myself to then switch off for the weekend. Mm-hmm. So using your diary in a quite a, you know, I guess, controlled manner can be incredibly liberating.
Absolutely. Actually, Angela, who is the CEO of NCT, and which is a big charity here in the UK.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I know. I did NCT classes.
Oh, really? Yeah. Did they exist in Germany?
No, because I've lived in the UK all my life. I mean, all of my kind of adult life. And so I did NCT classes when I was pregnant.
Yeah. So anyway, so she said that in her organization, they now have meeting-free Fridays. Obviously, it's not always perfect.
Exactly.
But that is such a powerful thing. And yeah, I can see how that would work really well. Let's talk about fears, which I do think is quite often a reason why you run out of time and you're very busy, because you want to make sure you've done everything so that nothing can go wrong. So I'm assuming you're an expert on dealing with fears, given you have written a book about it. I mean, how did you get interested in the topic? Was it something that played an important role in your own life, or why fears?
Yeah, absolutely. I wonder actually whether, you know, everybody who's listening can just stop for a moment and really connect with fear. And just kind of, yeah, do you feel fear? How often do you feel fear? What do you know about fear? Because what I have found is that fear is an emotion that we all have, and we have it very regularly, and it has a function and it's there. But we've been taught to, even the language of like overcome fear, or like beat fear, or, you know, and what I have noticed in my, literally in researching myself, in really feeling into, okay, what is my relationship with fear? That's what I've realized. And I realized that actually makes the fear stay. It makes it worse, because what happens is we're resisting the fear, because we kind of think that, like, for example, I'm an adult woman, right? I'm 53 years old and I've had a good career and so on. You shouldn't be scared. So how many people say this to you? Oh, you shouldn't be scared. And so then the message is, it's not okay to feel fear. There's something wrong if I feel fear, right? So then I resist the fear. I'm like, no, I don't want to be scared. But as we always say, right, that what you resist persists, because there's an energy. As you're pushing against something, it kind of stays. And so then, you know, you have this fear, and then you believe that as long as you have fear, you cannot be fierce. You know, you cannot follow your dreams. So then we're a little bit stuck, because we're waiting for the fear to go. And what I have realized is that actually it's an emotion. It's energy in motion, right? And if we allow the fear, and I'm sure you will know this, if I actually say, wow, I'm really scared, you know, then you're allowing it, it moves through, and sometimes it will stay, but sometimes it will move quite fast. Either way, what I have learned is that we allow to feel fear, like, wow, I'm really, really scared, and we make a bit more room. And then we can also feel, and I really want to do this. Like, I'm really scared, and I can also feel my fierceness, and I really want to do this. And then this famous book, right? Feel the fear and do it anyway. That's where it comes from. So then you feel the fear and you do it anyway, but you don't wait for the fear to go, or, you know, you don't give yourself a hard time that, you know, why are you so weak? Why do you feel fear? No, it's like, okay, fear. It's like joy. It's like anger. It's like, you know, it's an emotion. And it relaxes something in us, right? It relaxes something. It kind of just like, oh, okay. So I'll just take my fear with me as I go and explore new ventures. And what I found, this is just, I think, is so cool, to really kind of feel into not being scared of fear. So not to fear fear. And that really shifts something. Yeah.
That's really interesting. I guess it's quite a normal emotion, isn't it? I mean, if you didn't have it, it would be quite a dangerous situation to be in.
Yes, exactly. And, you know, and fear. So in my book, I talk about this, that I kind of, when I was feeling into it, I wrote also a lot about the ego and how, you know, what our relationship is with our ego, and that the ego is neither good or bad. You know, it's just there and it's attached to our identity. And so it will also often want us to stay in the status quo because that's safe, right? So our ego actually wants to keep us safe. So that's also good. And sometimes that really, really helps us. And sometimes it really doesn't. and I kind of thought that fear is a little bit like the ego's police. It's like, it's really effective, right? Because so I kind of imagine that, you know, the ego kind of sends the police, i.e. fear. And it's like, oh my God, no, but what if this happens? And what if this happens? And what if, right? And so then sometimes you don't do the thing you wanted to do. And then the ego can relax, like, okay, good, I kept her safe, you know? Mm-hmm. And so it's having this like relationship with your ego and understanding how fear kind of comes in and out that then allows you to connect with your fierceness and with your purpose and to venture forth anyway. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you are juxtaposing the word fear with fierce, which is such a smart word game, by the way. So my first reaction was, when I see people being fierce, I see them standing up for themselves. And quite often, working parents need to do that because they're operating in a system which is not designed for them. So be that setting boundaries or negotiating flexible working and so on. What I see is that sometimes working parents don't dare to be fierce, not just internally, but also not externally, because they're worried about the potential backlash. So how it will be perceived and whether or not they're going to be seen as a slacker. What's your approach to that?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, first of all, I really want to acknowledge how challenging it can be and how painful it can feel when we intuitively know what our fierceness wants to say, right? Because this is very linked to our integrity and to our values and to our, you know, our essence of who we are and what we want to stand for. And we all have that and we know it. And when that comes up and we can feel it, and then the fear comes, and often fear will use obviously very effective arguments like, you know, you can't say this, they might fire you. And then you're like, you know, I can't get fired because I have a family to look after. And, you know, so I always feel like it's really important to honor the dilemma, and that sometimes the fear can be very big, and sometimes we cannot, like, we don't feel the strength in us to overcome it, and for this also to be forgiven. You know, that you forgive yourself, that sometimes you choose not to be fierce. But in the times when you really just, it just comes up again and again, and it just doesn't sit right with you, and you just feel like you really want to say something, but there's this fear. What works for me really well is to really feel into why this matters to you. What is the impact? And not just on you, because this for me is the killer fact. And this is like what helped me at one point when I was in my career, I was being bullied. And I was going through exactly this kind of, oh, I don't want to be the troublemaker. I don't want to cause problems. And also we know that sometimes when we speak up for what is right, we get blamed. So, you know, it's not like we're making this up, that this, you know, that this could potentially happen, because we know, we see it around, the, you know, our environment that this happens, that, you know, whistleblowers get blamed. It's gaslighting. I mean, you know, it happens. And so you feel, but you, what you do, and this is what has helped me, that I realized when I was being bullied, it probably not just happening to me. So me not speaking up isn't just that I'm not honoring my own integrity and my own boundaries and my right to be respected, but it's also being complicit, and it's my silence is allowing this to happen to other people. And when I connected with that, and then I connected with my children, and I felt into what would I want for my children? Yeah, would I want them to feel able to speak up and say this is not okay? And I'm like, yes. And then it was clear. Then I knew what I had to do. And I didn't. And I was very, very scared, you know. And I've done it a couple of times in my career. And a couple of times it's worked. It got the result that I had intended. And a couple of times it didn't, you know. But really what is so important to me and what I notice is that if over a period of time you keep on ignoring your own inner truth and your voice and the impact that you're meant to bring into the world, it doesn't feel good. And I think sometimes, you know, we might get ill, or we, you know, we mentally or physically, because we are meant to follow our power. I really believe that.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. If you're not able to do the things that you really believe in the long run, that will grind you down. And it's really interesting when people think about their visions and what they want to achieve in the long run, there's such a big thing. Like, it just gives them wings. It sounds quite cheesy, but it really does, doesn't it? When they think about what is it that I want to achieve? And then once you're clearer on that, it helps you massively, in my experience. We've already talked about intuition and that slowness, which I absolutely love. What else have you seen create real strength in people who are in moments of turmoil?
Yeah, and it kind of all builds on each other, the, you know, the slowing down and the this kind of self-awareness. So I mean, I do a lot of work in leadership, and I always really feel that self-awareness is our superpower. You know, what makes us leaders, in inverted commas, I believe is actually how we lead ourselves, right? So how conscious am I about who I am? How conscious am I about how the beliefs and my, you know, biases and everything influences how I am present in the world? What I say, what my, you know, thoughts are, what I believe my entitlements are or not. And so the more I can be aware of that, the more I can actually ask myself, well, do I actually believe this? I mean, genuinely now, as a grown-up woman with my own, you know, awareness and intuition, do I actually believe that, you know, women are maybe less intelligent than men, or, you know, these stereotypes, or women are more natural carers and nurturers? I'm like, oh, I don't know, you know, I don't really believe that. I don't. I think we've been socialized over centuries, you know, in ways that mean that we allow ourselves to develop certain traits more easily because they're more socially acceptable. And for men, it's the other way around. I don't believe that it's like inherent, because that's who we, you know, who we are, particularly not generically. So it allows us to, self-awareness allows you to become much more intentional. So we're back to the same subject, you know. But that requires us to slow down, to notice that we're not our thoughts. Because if I can hear my thoughts, then I'm not my thoughts. And so then in that moment, a little bit of distance is created, like a little bit of space where, because, you know, when your mind goes 100 miles an hour and you're completely in your mind, you are your thoughts. There is no space. It's like, oh my God, when this happens, and have I done this? And I need to, you know, pack lunch and this and that. And it's like, oh. And then if you take a breath and you observe, you just observe this unbelievable speed of 50 million things in your mind. And that in itself is already slowing down a little bit. And then you can, maybe you can say, you know what? This isn't working for me. This is not working for me. And then you can pose the question, what would work for me? How could I help myself to more regularly check in with myself to see how am I? What am I thinking? And are these thoughts serving me? Or are they actually recreating something that is causing my suffering? And then in the same way, like the things that I'm doing, do I really need to do all of these things? And what do I want to do? That's the million-dollar question. You know, I think this is the most powerful question you can ask yourself. You know, what do you want?
Very true. We're coming towards the end of our time together, and we usually finish the podcast with practical things people can implement in the next week or so that take a maximum of 5 minutes. So I was just wondering, reflecting back on these decades of learning that you have, if you are picturing the people listening who have, you know, who are senior in their roles, who want to progress, who have big dreams, but it is also very stressful, what would be 5 things they could experiment with to take some of the learning and that you have just shared?
Okay, this is fun. I love it. Because I'm actually a really big fan in all of my work to, you know, you get inspired, you get motivated, and this is like this kind of head, heart, and then hand, and you take action. You actually do something, you know, ideally the next day, on the same day or the next day. So the first thing I would recommend is to try for 1 week, every day, take 3 deep breaths whenever you remember. I mean, this is difficult. This is difficult. I've done it when I first started, before I embarked on meditation. And if you find three deep breaths is too hard, one deep breath. Just whenever you remember, you don't have to, it doesn't have to be noisy if you're in the middle of a meeting or something. Just one deep breath. And as you're breathing out, connect with your feet on the floor. Just that. And just observe what you notice. So that's my number one. Number two is to do this kind of housekeeping, this inventory, where, and you will notice immediately because this is intuitive. Okay, this is not about thinking it. This is about feeling it. Where in your body can you feel tension? You know, something that wants your attention, but you haven't given it. You know, this like in the back of your mind, or really this like housekeeping, just go and notice when you bring it into the forefront and you actually take a decision. And the decision can be, I don't know right now what I want to do, but at least it's clear. And then notice how that helps you, because this is a practice you can do every evening before you go to bed. I'm a really big fan of having a purpose statement, actually writing down what matters to you and how you want to matter in the world. And you can change it, like, and definitely don't let perfection get in the way. But to actually write it down is very powerful. And I do this in my Step Into Your Power course that I run once a year. So, you know, we develop a purpose statement and it just connects you with your power and with your fierceness. And for me, remembering my purpose is the biggest like fear buster I know. So, yeah, I think those are my top tips.
Thank you so much. Yes, I completely agree on that with purpose. It's really transformational. It doesn't solve everything. Yeah. It doesn't make things, you know, life completely easy at all, but it just helps you to have a clear course, I would say. And where can people find out more about you, about your work, about your book?
On most of the social media channels, so on LinkedIn, Britta Fernandez Schmidt. I have a website, which is brittafs.com. And I'm also on Instagram. So yeah, and you can find out more about my book there and also about my course, Step Into Your Power. So yeah.
Great. Wonderful. It was great chatting to you, Britta. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you so much. And thank you for listening.
Thank you so much for listening today. And a special thank you to all of those of you who have connected with me on LinkedIn in the last few weeks. I really, really love hearing from listeners and hearing how you enjoyed the show. So it means a lot. Thank you so much. If you would like to be in touch in real life, do consider joining the Leaders Plus Fellowship program. It is such a fantastic community of working parents supporting each other to find a way to get careers where you can make a big difference in senior roles, but also do that unapologetically in a way that works for us. And if you want to apply, then the deadline is 20th of March. You can download the brochure for the program on leadersplus.org. Podcasting is also quite a male-dominated environment. If you look at the top charting podcasts, especially outside of the kids and family space, very often it's all led by men. I can't remember the numbers, but it is very male dominated. Just take a look at the charts. And interestingly enough, more females than males listen to podcasts. So another unequal space. And thank you for supporting this podcast by listening to it. But if you want to help us, I guess, have more influence in the space, then please do help by sharing it with your friends and by leaving a 5-star review. Thank you so much to all of those of you who've done that already. Have a wonderful week.